I'll find a way. Though her eyes burned with hate, with rage, and stayed steady on Eve's, her hands trembled. You locked your own door, Eve said, and walked out. Eve went straight to her office. She wanted coffee. Actually, she wanted a really big, really stiff drink, but coffee would do. Rio followed her in. I've got to deal with the next steps on this, but I wanted to say, before I do, you played her perfectly in there. Wasn't hard. She wanted to brag, wanted to rub it all in my face, or authority's face. I just gave her the platform. Lock her up tight, Rio, tight and long. You can count on me. I am. Alone, she turned to the board, to the dead. You've given them justice, Mira said from the doorway. I brought her in. The rest is up to Rio and the courts. You've given them justice, Mira repeated, and saved unknown others from ending up on your board. You convinced her to reveal herself, and believe me, Eve, that record will be studied by psychiatrists, by law enforcement, by legal minds for decades. I barely had to bait her. She was so primed to show off how smart she is, how much better she is. You never lost control and never let her see you were in control throughout. Her narcissism, her utter disregard for any semblance of a moral code, her need to be first, and her enjoyment of the kill, it came through so clearly. Some will argue her adolescence and her father's influence drove her to do the unspeakable. It won't fly, Mira added as Eve spun around. She's calculating, organized, intelligent. She's a psychopath, and one who was given permission by a parent to embrace her desire to kill. I can promise you, I'll tear down any attempt by her lawyer to build her as a misguided teenager, coerced and manipulated by her father. Trust me on that. Count on Rio. Trust Mira. I do. I do. And that'll help me sleep tonight. You should go home. Get started on that. Yeah. Working toward that. But before she could get out of her office, Whitney walked in. Good job, Lieutenant. Thank you, sir. You locked her up with her own words, but that doesn't negate the work that went into getting her in the box. Today, at least, the city's a safer place. I need you in the media center in 10. She literally felt everything in her sag. Yes, sir. I'd take this off you if I could, but the fact is, the people of New York deserve to hear from the primary of the investigation that identified and apprehended the two people who terrorized them for nearly a week. Turn that around, he added. In under a week, you and your team identified and apprehended two people who, if still at large, would surely be responsible for more deaths. Chief Tibble and I will both attend, but we agree the statement comes from you. Yes, sir. Then get the hell out of here, Dallas, and get some ice on that eye. When she went out to the bullpen, she saw Rourke talking with Lowenbaum beside Peabody's desk. Lowenbaum broke off, stepped to her, held out a hand. Thanks. Back at you. Buy you a drink. Media conference. Then I'm going to sleep for a couple years. After that, deal. She turned to Rourke, shoved a hand through her hair. It's going to be a little while longer. We've got a media conference. Then I'll deal with the paperwork and we can go. I'll be here when you're done. Peabody, let's get this over with. I'm skipping the media deal. I'm finishing the paperwork. I want to go home too, Peabody said before Eve could object. They don't need me in the media center, and I need to tie this up. I really need to tie it up and put it away. Eve looked at her partner's tired face, hollow eyes. Okay. Good work, Peabody. Good work all around. With a nod, Eve headed out to give New York a face, such as it was. 21. The media circus could have been worse. She'd had worse. Since Kyung, the media liaison, who wasn't an asshole, told her to use her own words and judgment, she gave what she felt was a straightforward statement. Through the efforts of the NYPSD, its officers and technicians, two individuals have been identified, apprehended, and charged with the 25 murders and numerous injuries incurred as a result of the attacks at Woman Rink, Times Square, and Madison Square Garden. Reginald Mackey and his daughter Willow Mackey have confessed to these crimes, and as the investigation also uncovered their plans to target others, confessed to same. Of course, that wasn't enough. It never seemed to be enough. She answered questions, some salient, some stupendously stupid. She answered those that targeted Willow's age. Yes, Willow Mackey is 15. At 15, she killed 25 people in cold blood. The investigation uncovered her plan to kill more, including her own mother and her 7-year-old half-brother. Due to the nature of her crimes, she will be tried as an adult. When pressed, she gave a bare-bones summary of Willow's arrest, then had to pull back a flash of temper when one of the reporters shouted out, "My information is Willow Mackey was injured during her arrest. Was this retaliation for allegedly killing a cop?" Have you ever had a flash grenade tossed in your general direction? No. Ever had somebody in full body armor firing a laser rifle, a handheld, a blaster at you? Oh, miss those too. Every member of the team involved in apprehending the individual charged with 25 murders, including Officer Kevin Russo, put their lives at risk to protect and serve. Every member of the team acted and reacted in a lawful and appropriate manner to the threat, as the record of the arrest will show. Now, if you follow up, Nadine called up, interrupting what would likely have been an unwise assessment of the previous reporter's intelligence. Lieutenant Dallas, did you incur your very visible injuries during the arrest of Willow Mackey? She objected violently to being arrested. Would that include what appears to be a severe gash on your hand? Did she also have a knife? Yes and yes. I guess I forgot to ask if any of you ever had someone try to slit your throat with a combat knife. She missed. If any of you want to play up the angle of her age, like we should sympathize, just make sure you include the names of the 25. Elissa Wyman, Brent Michelson, she began, and named every one. That's all you get. One moment, Lieutenant. Tibble stepped forward, gave the entire room the hard eye until everyone settled. I have personally reviewed recordings taken from Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody, Lieutenant Loewenbaum, and others during the confrontation and arrest of Willow Mackey. Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody, and a civilian consultant all received direct strikes deployed by Willow Mackey and were spared serious injury only due to their body armor. He allowed just a hint of temper to show as he turned the hard eye on the original questioner. Age doesn't matter a whole hell of a lot, in my opinion, when you're armed with laser rifles, flash grenades, and you know how to use them. More if you use them to strike at civilians, at police officers, and rack up kills like trophies. Lieutenant Dallas and her team risked their lives today, as they do every day, to save yours, to save your spouses, your sons and daughters, your friends and neighbors. If anyone wishes to question the necessary actions of the courageous men and women who risked all to stop that unconscionable number at 25, talk to me. Lieutenant Dallas, you're dismissed with gratitude. Sir. She got out, got the hell out, pitifully grateful Rourke was right there waiting for her. In the car, she put her head back, closed her eyes. There'll be others who'll pull that. If you mean using her age to pump up a story, or the fact that she got a few bumps during the arrest, yes, I expect so. Just as I know they'll be drowned out. Put it away, darling. Tibble was pissed. You don't see that every day. The fact he was, and let it show, has impact. You knew all 25 names. Some things stick with you. He let her rest, hoped she slept, but she shifted, sat up as he drove through the gates. You're gonna want me to eat, but I feel a little off. I don't know if I can deal with food. Maybe a little soup. It'll help you sleep. Maybe, she thought, but don't trank it. I won't. She leaned on him as they walked to the front door, leaned as exhaustion crept back inch by inch. Because it's done, she told herself. Because it's over. Somerset and Galahad stood in the foyer, as they might after any workday. But it wasn't any day. She could have pulled out an insult to make it more ordinary, but Somerset had wrestled with his own trauma. She didn't have it in her. Apparently, neither did he. He scanned her face, her bruises, but didn't smirk or comment. Will you let me tend to your injuries, Lieutenant? I just want to sleep. He nodded, looked at Rourke. Are you hurt? No. You look better. I'm fine. We had quiet times, the cat and I. Now you'll have your own. There's chicken soup with noodles. I thought soothing would be best after this day. Thanks for that. Rourke wrapped an arm around Eve's waist, turned her toward the stairs. Lieutenant. She glanced back. So tired now she nearly floated. Evil doesn't have an age. No. No, it really doesn't. She thought briefly of her home office, of checking on the paperwork, but couldn't do it. Not now. Not yet. Just an hour down, she told Rourke as they turned into the bedroom. Then I'll think about food and the rest. Just an hour down first. I could use that myself. The cat leaped on the bed as they undressed, bumped his head against her side as she crawled into bed. She gave him a couple of strokes, found it comforting. More comforting yet when he curled his tubby body into the small of her back. And perfect, finally perfect. When Rourke slid in beside her, drew her close. She ached everywhere, from the bruises, from fatigue, from the headache drumming behind her eyes. But held between two loves, she slept. And slept straight through until the first narrow break of dawn. Disoriented, she stared over to where Rourke sat. Not in business mode, but elegantly casual, working by the light of his PPC. The cat had taken over Rourke's spot on the bed, stretched out luxuriously. Eve started to speak, found her throat bitterly dry.
What?
She managed.
What time?
Early. Rourke set aside his PPC, rose. Lights on 10%. That eye's more colorful, but we'll work on it now. Let's have a look at the rest. He whipped the covers off.
Hey!
As I suspected, you've quite an assortment. We'll wand you and try the jet tub.
Coffee. Just coffee.
Not just, but that as well. Maybe some scrambled eggs and toast to start. See how that settles.
I'm not sick.
She sat up, winced.
Maybe sore.
So the wand, the jets, the food. Otherwise, I'll devil you into taking a blocker, and we'd both rather I didn't have to. She couldn't argue with that. Besides, the healing wand eased some of the soreness, and the tub, along with whatever he put in the water, helped more. And the coffee helped everything. She ate the eggs, which settled fine. In fact, they woke up her appetite. Now I'm starving. He turned to her, caught her face in his hand, kissed her. Long, soft, deep.
Well, that's not what I was hungry for. But now that you mention it, I think I'm up to it.
We'll give those bruises a little longer to heal. But he kept her face framed in his hands, kissed her again.
I'm just glad to see you.
Where did I go?
Darling Eve, you had grief behind your eyes. So much grief and fatigue. It's gone now.
I just needed sleep.
And you.
And the cat. She let out a long breath.
And this.
Now he pressed his lips to her forehead. There's one more thing you might want. Come with me.
I was thinking I want pancakes.
We can get to that. He pulled her to the elevator and in, programmed the destination manually.
A swim would be good, she considered. Might help work out the stiffness.
When the doors opened, she was, for the second time that morning, disoriented.
How many rooms do you...
She trailed off as her gaze arrowed in on the wide U, studded with controls, the sleek leather chair in its curve.
Command center. Holy shit! Holy shit!
It was, sort of, like walking into the design he'd shown her only days before. The walls painted that quiet, easy color that wasn't exactly green, wasn't exactly gray. And the absolute magnificence of her new workstation. An entire wall of screens.
Did I sleep for a week?
You've been out of the office, so to speak, for a few days. And the crew took advantage. Double shifts. There are still some details, some work, but it's up and running.
That?
She pointed at the big wide U of deep, maybe commanding brown, with its flecks and veins of dark green and that not quite green base for an array of controls.
That's up and running?
I figured that would be your priority.
Test it out.
She beelined for it, absolutely delighting him. Ran a hand over the stone, studied the controls.
How do I...
She laid her hand on a palm screen. It hummed, but did nothing.
You haven't told it what to do, have you?
Amused, Rourke joined her.
Like...
Open operations?
The command center came to life. Controls flashing on, glinting like jewels, the sort of jewels she appreciated most.
Operations open, Dallas, Lieutenant Eve.
Holy shit, she said again.
Just like that.
I had a bit of time this morning. It'll take a bit more to transfer everything to your comfort zone, but yes, just like that.
Okay.
Open file. Mackie, Willow.
Accessing. Where would you like the data displayed?
Wall screen.
As she hadn't designated one section, the entire wall filled with data.
Wow! Display final report by Peabody, Detective Delia. She finished it, Eve noted when it flashed on. She wrote it up, filed it, done. Rourke kissed the top of her head. Done. Wait. She dropped into the chair, a chair of rich forest green leather, said, oh, swiveled. Oh, this is it. Seriously it. The redhead with the tits and the boots knows her stuff. I could play with this all day. I'll need to play with this all day to get up to speed. What else can it everything you need? But you might want to take a glance at least at the rest. She swiveled again, surveyed the room. The seating area worried her a little. It looked entirely too comfortable, with its long, low sofa in forest shadows green. But not fancy or frilly, even with a couple of pillows tossed on it. A new sleep chair, which Galahad had claimed already. She rose, wandered, found her board. She only had to roll it out of the slot in the wall. A kitchen area, updated big time. Shiny, yes, but simple. And simple again, an arrangement of floating shelves. Probably real wood, she mused, holding some of her useless but prized things. The stuffed Galahad Rourke had given her. The statue of the goddess was a gift from Peabody's mother. A sheriff's badge. A fancy magnifying glass. A photograph of her and Rourke, taken when they'd been banged up some after an arrest and smiling at each other. He'd added art. Or the designer had, which hadn't been run by her. But how could she argue with the framed cityscapes? Her city. Their city. She frowned at the thick green plastic boards over what was obviously a wide hole in the side of the room. What happened there? It's more what's happening. As I said, there are details yet. This is something extra. When it's done, the dining area goes in front of what will be glass. You open the glass, and you'll be able to step out onto a small terrace. I thought you'd enjoy that. We'd enjoy eating here with the glass open in fine weather. We, she thought. He'd designed the old office for her. This one was for them. You were right. And not just because it looks really good. You were right, because it's my space, sure, but it's for both of us. You were right. It was time. Remember you said that when we start on the bedroom. Not gonna think about that. This is much too frosty. Now I need to start playing with my command center. I'll give you some pointers, then leave you to it for a couple hours. That's about what we have before we need to leave for Bella's party. The what? Already halfway across the room, she stopped, turned on her heel. Oh, but look, don't you think we could skip that? I mean, bruised up, tired out, save New York. She's not going to notice or care if we're around. She's one. I know as little as you about the mind of a one-year-old. But I know Mavis. Crap, crap, crap. We have to go. Shoving at her hair, Eve sent the command center a look of longing. Okay. So we go for, say, an hour. 90 minutes tops. Then we come back. Take that swim. We can have pool sex. That sounds like a bribe. Considering, amusement clear, he nodded. I'm very susceptible to the right kind of bribe. I believe we have a deal. Solid. She headed straight back to command. She got her 2 hours, found it exhilarating and amazing. The comp was so quick. It all but anticipated her commands. The screen images so clear, she almost felt she could walk into them. The hollow functions would take her a while to get a steady handle on, but even now she could see using them to put herself back into a crime scene or bring a wit, a consultant, a potential suspect right into her space. In all her wildest dreams, she could never have imagined having so much tech right at her fingertips, even though it meant actually dealing with tech. But the best, the abso-ult, as Mavis would say, was discovering the mini-unit that allowed her to program coffee right at her command center. That little bonus had her doing a mental happy dance even as they left for Bella's party. It's going to be really exceptional pool sex. Rourke slid behind the wheel. Is it now? She yanked him to her, gave him a hard kiss. Better stick to the shallow end, because we could drown. And even then, life's full of risks. And we are the brave. An hour, 90 minutes tops, right? For pool sex? Laughing, she punched his shoulder. She decided a Sunday afternoon drive downtown didn't completely suck. Closed case, long sleep, hot food, and a command center. Life could be a lot worse. Maybe it would be the first birthday party she'd ever attended, but how bad could it be? Better not think about it. You're sure the present deal got there? She asked as she maneuvered into a parking place. I am. I just don't want to screw up. Be those people who forgot the present for the kid. Delivered yesterday and stowed away by Leonardo. Okay. I bet there are going to be others there. I certainly hope so. No. I mean, others. The others who crawl or walk like drunks with their hands waving or zip around like Bella. Ah, as in children. I'm sure you're right. Why do they stare? They're always staring. Like dolls, she said as they walked into the building. Or sharks. I have no idea, but now I'll likely worry about it. Join the club. She took the stairs, as she had countless times before Rourke, to the apartment that had once been hers. To the apartment, she thought, that, like her home office, no longer remotely resembled what had been hers. She was a lot more than okay with that. Start the clock, she told Rourke, and knocked. The door swung open into noise, into color, into movement. Balloons, streamers, flying, unicorns, fairies, and a rainbow-colored dragon. All this lived behind the nearly 7-foot black man in a black vest over a red skin shirt. He grinned widely. Hey there, skinny white girl. Hey back, large black man. She accepted the hug that had her eyeballing the long red feather that curled down from his earlobe. How many first birthday parties had the owner slash bouncer of a sex club on the guest list? Then again, Mavis. Hey, Rourke. Crack, good to see you.
Cack, cack, cack,
came the call from behind him. He turned, caught Bella on the fly, and the birthday girl, the pretty little golden-haired sprite in a frothy, sparkly pink dress and sparkly shoes that flashed with lights, nestled in the arms, bulging with biceps and tattoos. She whispered something in his ear that made him throw back his head and laugh. When he turned around, Bella's eyes widened with delight.
Dash! Ark!
She launched herself at Eve, who managed not to fumble the pass. Yeah, hey, happy birthday. Wiggling with glee, Bella launched into one of her incomprehensible monologues, then stopped, her eyes filled with concern, sympathy, sorrow. What? Instantly, sweat pooled at the base of Eve's spine.
What did I do?
Boo.
It was heartfelt as Bella touched her fingers to the fading bruise under Eve's eye. Yeah, that's what I said. Very carefully, Bella leaned in to touch her lips to the same spot, smiled, babbled. She says it'll be all better. Eve glanced at Crack. How the hell do you know what she's saying? I be bilingual. You be full of it. Eve remembered to leave off the shh in front of the kid. And when she noted Bella had shifted her attention to Rourke with her dipped chin, angled head, flirty smile, Eve saw her chance. She wants you. You hold her. Well, I... But Rourke found his arms full of a flirtatious toddler who latched on, kissed his cheeks, then batted her big blue eyes. You're a charmer, aren't you now? Eve heard him say as she made her escape. The floor was full of crawlers, toddlers, other little type people with sticky fingers or drool. She spotted Peabody and, relieved, even though her partner wore a pink dress with a line of silver frills down the right side, headed toward her, but was intercepted by the call of her name. Mavis, in pink, Jesus, so much pink, skin pants, or paint, covered with white stars and a crotch-skimming dress, or was it a top, floating over it in summer sky blue with pink stars, dashed toward her on blue and pink-striped booties with dizzying heels. Her hair, fountaining on top and tumbling down the back, blended all the colors of the spectrum and bounced, just as she did. She caught Eve in a fierce hug. You came! Sure. I wasn't sure. Not with everything juggling and whacked. 2 minutes, she added, then dragged Eve through the crowd. Good God, Somerset! He appeared to be having a conversation with some kid who barely came to his bony knees. And the Miras. She really wanted to get a good look at Dennis Mira, just to make sure he was all right. But Mavis kept dragging her until they stood in the symphonic rainbow that was Mavis and Leonardo's bedroom. We didn't get a chance to huddle much after the nightmare at the garden. I knew you'd come that time. I knew you'd come, and we'd all get through. I finally fell asleep. And when... With a shake of her head that sent the fairies dangling from her ears whirling, Mavis grabbed onto Eve again. I was scared. So scared. I knew Bella was okay, home with the sitter, but I was scared if something happened to me and Leonardo. She wouldn't have us. She's got you. She always will. When I saw you, I stopped being scared. Today's for happy. For really happy. My baby's first birthday party. Looks like and sounds like a hell of a party. Wait until you see the cake. Ariel made it. It's a fairy castle with unicorns. Naturally. Did you invite everyone you know? Only the ones who count. Let's get drinks. Lots of drinks. Eve got a drink and managed to pretty much avoid Trina, especially when she noticed the hairdresser giving her hair that look. She saw Dennis Mira's dreamy smile as he sat right on the floor to play some game with a gaggle of kids. She watched McNabb gallop around in his air boots with some other kid plastered to his back, who shrieked as if being stabbed, a sound everyone else appeared to assume meant pleasure. Garnet De Winter was smiling down at some visually stunning mid-sized kid who talked earnestly to Mira. Leonardo, a shiny, dome-shaped party hat on his long copper hair, beamed at his girls, manning the bar in a tunic the color of sapphires. Louise and Charles, late to the party. Doctors and cops, Eve thought. and saw Rourke talking to Feeney. Doctors, cops, and criminals. Reformed. Bouncers and XLCs. E-geeks and fashion designers. And a serious boatload of kids. She didn't know everyone, but she knew a good chunk. Her people as much as Mavis's, like it or not. Chaos got real when the time came for Bella to rip into the gifts. Where the hell are they gonna put them all? Rourke slid an arm around Eve's waist. They'll find a way. Maybe, Eve thought, but certainly at the moment, the kid was ridiculously thrilled with everything. Looks like we're up, Rourke said, as Leonardo signaled. He slipped away with Leonardo into another part of the apartment. Together, they carried out an enormous box of glittery pink and silver. I'm told this is a magic box, Rourke said to Bella, who stared at it with huge eyes. And you've only to pull that ribbon there to see what's inside. With Mavis's help, Bella pulled the long pink ribbon. The box collapsed outward to reveal the contents. She'd wanted a dollhouse, according to Peabody, and Mavis had confirmed, and since Rourke had been in charge, like the home he'd built for himself, it was more castle than house. And in this case, all girl. Pink and white and pretty with its turrets and drawbridges, its arched windows and fussy balconies. Eve didn't get it, just didn't get the concept of giving dolls a place where they could gather to plot. But she got Bella's reaction and couldn't deny the little squeeze of her own heart. Bella gasped, put her fingers to her lips, her eyes saucer wide with shock. Mavis murmured to her, and those eyes went shiny as she looked up at Rourke, over at Eve. Then another girl squealed and rushed forward. Bella's shiny eyes went hot and fierce, her teeth showed. Eve was prepared to see a long forked tongue shoot out between them. Obviously imagining the same, the squealer stopped dead and backed up. Shiny eyes returned. And Bella toddled to Eve. When Bella started to lift her arms, Eve took the safer course and crouched down.
Dosh,
Bella said, with a world of meaning in the single syllable. Her arms went around Eve, and she swayed in the hug, as her mother often did.
Dosh,
she said again, and held out a hand for Rourke.
Ork. Das. Ta. Ta. Ta.
Whatever she said after was beyond Eve's scope, but the emotion was crystal. Pure joy, deep gratitude. Glad you like it.
Of. Of who?
Bella let out a long sigh, then sparkled as she danced in place. Whirling, she charged the dollhouse, applauded, poked at it, pulled out a throne-like chair, and hooted with laughter. I'd say it's a hit, Eve said. Then was struck when Bella looked over, smiled, and held out a hand to the squealer, an invitation to play. A lot going on in that head, Eve realized, and everywhere else, too. A gift deeply wished for. Let me take a minute here, sister. And thanks to the people who'd granted the wish, done with charm and sweetness. Another moment to celebrate, to have it for herself. Then a willingness to share it, to have someone enjoy it with her. Nature, nurture? What the hell? The nature part was a lot of risk, a gamble, often the luck of the draw. Nurture could be kind or cruel, smart or insane, and still... But here was a kid with just 1 year under her belt. Sweet, innocent, but not stupid. Iron-willed, but compassionate. Already with her own sense of style, Eve supposed. Her own little agenda. How did all that get in there? You guys hit that one out of the park, Peabody, sipping some frothy pink concoction, stepped up beside Eve to watch Bella and some of her friends with the dollhouse. It's abso-mag, and when the place clears out some, I'm getting a turn with it. She took another sip. It's a good day. It's holding its own, Eve began, and her communicator sounded. Shit, shit. She switched to text, too many people, and read the message. Shit again. I've gotta go. We catch one? We're not on the roll. No. It's Willow Mackey. Some issues. Let me tell McNabb. No, you stay. It's just cleanup. If it turns into more, I'll tag you. Crap. Tell Mavis I'm sorry. She glanced around, saw Rourke had already fetched their coats. Tell her I'll tag her later. She grabbed her coat from Rourke, got out before any questions could delay her. What have you got? A uniform in the hospital. A CS rep in hysterics, and people who'd better have a damn good explanation. We're going in hot, she added, because I am pissed. Epilogue. As the communication had come from Officer Shelby, Eve ordered her to go to the garage and wait. When they pulled in, Shelby stood beside Eve's designated slot as if guarding it from invaders. Lieutenant, I apologize for contacting you on your free day. Forget it. Status. The prisoner is contained. She had some minor injuries, has been treated. I want her transferred to Rikers today, put in maximum security. And for now, Eve intended to go to the confinement area of Central herself. The injured officer? He should have arrived at the hospital by now, sir. The MTs indicated while his injuries were serious, they weren't life-threatening. The ones I give him, maybe. How the hell did she get her hands on a weapon? And what the hell are you doing here, Shelby? You're not in uniform. No, sir, I'm not on the roll. I came in to meet Mary Kate. That is Franco, the nurse practitioner. She had morning duty at the infirmary. We're friends, sir, and we're going to see a vid later. I was going down when I heard the altercation. In the elevator, Eve ordered containment level, swiped her code to allow it. Spell it out. Sir, upon hearing the sounds of an altercation, I withdrew my service weapon from my bag and entered the infirmary. Officer Minx was down, bleeding from wounds on the face and the body. The adult female, identified subsequently as Jessica Gromer, the CS rep assigned to the prisoner, was also on the floor, screaming. N.P. Franco was attempting to defend herself as the prisoner advanced on her with a scalpel. She, Franco, had grabbed a pressure syringe and, a bedpan, sir. I called out to the prisoner to drop her weapon, at which time she attempted to grab Franco, I assume as cover or for a hostage, but Franco held her off. The prisoner then attempted to charge me, at which time I deployed my weapon, stunning her. Shelby cleared her throat. I secured the prisoner while Franco immediately moved to Officer Minx to assess and treat his injuries. I did demand, in harsh terms, for CS Rep Gromer to stop screaming. Gromer made it very clear once we had the situation under control she would report me for same. What were the harsh terms, officer? Sir, I believe I may have, in the heat of the moment, told her to shut the fuck up or I'd stun her too. Good. Your lieutenant advises you not to give another thought to any bullshit report filed by obvious moron Gromer. Thank you, Lieutenant. What was Willow Mackey doing in the infirmary? Sir, I questioned both Gromer, who was not initially cooperative, and Franco, as Officer Minx needed to be transported. I haven't yet written up my report. Spell it out, officer. Write it later. Eve stepped off, nodded to the guard on the steel door of the containment area. The prisoner had availed herself of the rep from CS, who, apparently sympathetic to her age and situation, has already filed an objection regarding her classification as an adult. That's going nowhere. Keep going. During their interview, the prisoner claimed to be in pain from injuries incurred during arrest, resulting from police brutality. Uh-huh. And? The prisoner collapsed, stated she couldn't breathe. The rep called for assistance, and Officer Minx escorted the prisoner and, by her request, the rep to the infirmary. Franco instructed Officer Minx to help the prisoner onto the exam table and restrain her to it, at which time Gromer argued that the prisoner was in pain and only a child and should be treated with more care and compassion. The prisoner stumbled forward as if dizzy or lightheaded, knocking over a tray of tools. Pitched forward again, making sounds of acute pain when Officer Minx attempted to assist. From the statements, it would appear at this time, the prisoner grabbed a scalpel from the drawer of the counter, though neither Gromer nor Franco saw the move. But when Minx again went to assist, she slashed his face. She nearly got his eye, sir, then stabbed him, his throat, his chest, kicked him back and down, then turned on Franco. It was, sir, about this time that I entered the room. Okay. Good work, officer. Hold here. She went to the cop on the door, and though they knew each other, offered her badge for scanning. Log us in. Dallas, Shelby, and Rourke. Who you gonna pay a Sunday visit to? The Mackeys. Both of them. He logged them in, gave Eve their sectors and cell numbers. He opened the door. Palm plate, retina scan, security swipe, and a code that changed twice daily. Inside, more cops, another scan, another door. It wasn't Riker's, Eve thought, but it wasn't a pink and white dollhouse either. Through that door and into the cages lining the sidewalls. And plenty of people in them. Some grouped together in more basic holding, others in one- or two-person cages waiting for transfer elsewhere, a few waiting for their turn before a judge on Monday morning. For the hard cases, like Willow Mackey, there was yet one more door. The cop on this eyed Eve, eyed Shelby. How's Minx? They said he'd be okay, Shelby told him, and he shook his head. Barely out of the academy. Needs a year or two on the beat, in traffic, in a cube, before they plug him down here. She's third cage, left. Eve walked down to where Willow sprawled on the single bunk in a cage. It held a toilet, no lid, bolted to the floor, and a small sink bolted to the wall. I don't have to talk to you. Not interested in anything you have to say, Eve returned. Just wanted a look before you take up housekeeping at Riker's later today. I'm not going there. You don't seem to get your days of choices are finished. Officer, I also wanted you to have a look at someone you've helped to put where she belongs. CS is getting me out, Gromer told me. And when I get out, Gromer's going to be reprimanded, if she's lucky. And if I get my way, she'll be out of a job come tomorrow. And you will now be further charged with attempted murder of a police officer, with assault with a deadly on same, with attempting to escape, with attempted assault with a deadly on a medical. Just adds weight. Riker's max security until trial. You just bought that. And oh boy, they're gonna love you there. Fresh, really fresh meat. I'll get out! Tears leaped into Willow's eyes as she shoved to her feet.
I'll get out, and I'll come for you. Now I'm bored. Satisfied, Eve signaled to Shelby, to Rourke, and walked away with Willow's curses echoing. Go on up, officer. Write it up and file. Then find your friend and go to the vids. You did good today. Thanks, Lieutenant. Thank you for the opportunity. I put you in homicide. I didn't put you in that infirmary. The psychopath back there gave you the opportunity, and you handled it. Dismissed. Yes, sir. You chose well, Rourke murmured when Shelby headed out. Eve gave him a fierce smile. I like to think so. One more stop. More steel doors, more scans. Then Eve stood outside the cage holding Reginald Mackey. He didn't sprawl on the bunk like his daughter, but paced back and forth from wall to wall. She imagined him pacing a cage for the rest of his life. Has word traveled down here that we took your daughter alive? He stopped pacing, turned, stared at her with his ruined eyes. You can't try her as an adult. We had a deal. Terms were not met, not even close to met. Let me be the first to pass along the fact that she just tried an escape. Used the infirmary, an idiot CS rep and a green officer. The officer is now in the hospital with his face slashed with stab wounds. She's going to Rikers, Mackey, and there she'll stay until her trial. Then it's Omega for the next century. Give or take a few years. I helped you! You didn't. She wasn't where you said, where you probably really thought she'd be. She was at your ex-wife's, lying in wait. And on the record, she bragged about how she intended to kill her stepfather, then gut her brother while she made her mother watch. Then she'd finish her. She wanted to rack up 100 bodies at the school. Kids, teachers, parents, bystanders. Didn't matter as long as she hit the number. That's what you spawned, Mackey. I figure maybe she was born wrong. Maybe she had that twist in her right from the jump, but you nurtured it. You stoked it, educated it, brought it along. She had choices, sure, but you made the choices she made easy for her. You made them righteous. She felt nothing for him when he began to weep. Nothing. I want you to think about that for the rest of your life. When she walked away, his sobs echoed as Willow's curses had. We are done down here now, Rourke asked her. Absolutely. There's good news, as this place is starting to make me twitchy. Not a cage that could hold you, Ace. I'd rather never find out. I just have to go up, make the arrangements for her transfer, and I should contact Whitney. Just bring him up to speed. Then we're done. As they moved back, the correct way, in his opinion, through the doors, he ran a hand down her back. On home, then. She started to nod. Home sounded excellent. Then she thought, choices. To kill, to train to kill. To move into trouble or turn away. To share a precious new gift. To give thanks. Wherever you came from, however you grew up, it always came down to the choices you made, even when you only had 1 year on the planet. She made one of her own and took his hand. Let's go back to the party. Voluntarily, he said, making her laugh. Let's go back to the weird and the happy. Let's go have some fucking birthday cake. He made a choice of his own, cupped her chin, and kissed her. That sounds absolutely perfect. They rode up, away from the cages, from the curses, the tears,
from those who chose to shed blood, and made their way back to the weird and the happy. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Apprentice in Death by J.D. Robb, performed by Susan Erickson. Engineered by Brian Packard. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliancedaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.